This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
So, Neil, you just had your birthday?
I did.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, do you want to tell people what you decided to do with your time off to relax?
Well, it wasn't relax.
I bet it fucking wasn't.
I decided to go airsofting. You know, because I don't get to go that often.
Yeah, he hobbled back into the house.
And that was yesterday, and I'm fucked today. My thighs. Like, I'm not doing anything today. It was actually a good day for recording. But it does make you think. You know, when we're playing the airsoft games, they're about 15 minutes. And then you get a you play for about 15, 20 minutes, and then you get a 5-10 minute break, and then you back out for another 15, 20 minutes. Just carrying the gun for that long, that starts to get heavier and heavier throughout the day.
Mm.
And it does make you think what it's like for the military.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a fucking different ball game, isn't it? Like, it's one of those things that you don't think about the muscles you use. Like we were talking about with you when you're playing airsoft, like the angle you're at with your arm stretched out holding the rifle.
Mm-hmm. Like, the foregrip.
Sure. That's what they say, yeah. That's the terminology, apparently. I'll take your word for it. You're not even thinking about it. You're thinking, oh, my arm hurts, but it affects your chest and all.
Yeah, my chest's fucked. My shoulder blade's fucked. My thighs are fucked. My back's fucked.
Is there anything that's not fucked?
Well, I would have said my head, but I got shot in the forehead.
Mm.
It raised a bit.
So basically you're in tatters today.
Yeah, it didn't help, but I fell flat on my face.
Yeah, but I mean, it wouldn't be a day out for you if you hadn't.
I toe-pegged a tree root.
Yeah.
And went down fast.
Yeah. But like you said yourself, it's easily done. You're in a fucking forest, like, so.
Yeah. And I fell in a trench as well. Someone said, you go down the trench, there's someone at the other end.
Yeah, they knew what they were doing.
And the further you got into this trench, the more it got like a swamp.
Mm.
And I was fucked. Like,
yeah, your boots look a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
I'm Annie from Boston, Massachusetts.
And I'm Johanna from Vienna, Austria. We are the hosts of Fresh Hell, your international podcast that covers murder, mystery and the macabre throughout history. Are you interested in the 3,569 ways your household could have killed you in the Victorian era?
Do you know how malaria and syphilis played a role in the John List family murders?
And have you ever wondered what Prince Albert's sex chair had to do with the murder of Stanford White? Okay, nothing. It had nothing to do with it. We're still telling you about it, though.
It's a pretty great sex chair. If you're looking for another show that talks about Ted Bundy, this is probably not the podcast for you. But if you're looking for two women that cover lesser-known cases from all over the world with a lot of background information.
So much background information that you will rock your local pub quiz from now on.
Then find Fresh Hell Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
We also have German cannibals.
See you soon.
Tschüss.
Right, so today, Neil, we're going to be covering the case of Joseph Arady.
Who's that?
Do you remember when we did Last Meals and there was an inmate who had ice cream?
And he thought he was coming back tomorrow to finish it?
Yes.
Yeah.
He asked for it to be kept for him.
Yeah. Yeah. You said we'd cover it.
Yes. Yeah. No.
And that's what we're doing today.
That's what we're doing today.
Okay.
It's a case I really want to cover. As soon as I looked into his story a bit more, I was like, yeah, we have to do it.
Yeah.
So here we are, we're doing it. So, Joseph Arady. He was born on the 29th of April in 1915 in Pueblo, Colorado. His parents were Mary and Henry Arady, and he also had a younger brother called George. Now, his parents, they were originally from Syria, but they had emigrated to the US not long before Joseph was born. And they didn't speak English, which, you know, I'm sure made their goal of finding work just that bit harder. But luckily, Henry, his father, did manage to get a job, and he started working at a steel mill, which, Neil, you know all about that.
I know a lot about steel mills.
Sonny Sheff.
Sheffield Steel.
Now, one other thing about his parents. They were first cousins.
Well, that's a good start.
It's none of my business now. So his father was said to be of average intelligence. His mother was described as, quote, probably feeble-minded. Right.
Bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah. So what that means is feeble-minded is in the category of the higher end of functioning for mental deficiency. His brother was said to be a high moron.
Fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, like, if I were to call you a fucking moron.
Yeah. Yeah,
that comes from this scale.
Yeah, it was a term that was actually used. So just to give you a little bit of an idea.
Just how far we've come.
Still have a lot further to go, don't we? So to give you an idea of the type of terminology, like I said, feeble-minded was used to describe someone on the higher end of functioning, and a median was imbecility. And when you call someone an imbecile?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it comes from.
So that comes from that?
It was an actual term that was used, yeah. Mm. And
so I wonder how many times I've called someone an imbecile or a moron and it's actually been correct to that scale.
Correct for like early 1900s.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think me and you kind of have an agreement. Like, I'm in an argument. If I was to call you an idiot or you were to call me a bitch, that would be like done, game over. It would fucking blow up. I think both of us agree that we don't kind of...
Yeah, like, so I've just turned... We're going to say 25.
You would say, I think we'd say 21.
No, I was going to say 25. I've just turned 35 and I've had confrontations with people like gentlemen larger than myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I have never been as scared as when we were in an argument at work and I called you a bitch. I can't even remember what we were arguing about. I don't even think it was a big argument. And I called you a bitch and you walked at me slowly with no expression on your face, like you won from the ring.
Mm-hmm.
If I needed to go to the toilet, I would have shat myself.
Mm. See, like I said to you, you know this. Using it lighthearted, you know, I don't give a shit. You call me a bitch. But yeah, with that tone...
It's because I went, you fucking bitch.
Yeah. you say that, I think, to any woman and it's fucking on. But yeah, to get back to the scale, like I said, feeble-minded was on the higher end, imbecility was the median, and idiocy was the low end. Okay?
Okay.
So it's said about Joseph that he did not speak for the first 5 years of his life.
What?
He just wasn't verbal for the first 5 years. And Joseph, even, you know, as he got older and he did speak, it was very kind of short sentences, kind of like...
Like myself.
Two or three...
What?
It was like two or three word sentences, it was said, that he used.
Okay.
So while Joseph was in school... his principal told his parents that they should just keep him at home. He was unteachable. Yeah, and can I
think I've had that said about me.
Unteachable.
Unteachable.
Well, you know how it feels then. It's a shitty thing to say to a person or about a person.
Yeah, at school. Unteachable.
And can I just also note that this was said about Joseph after 1 year in school. They didn't give him much of a fucking chance, really.
Yeah, I was towards the end of my school life.
They give you a good shot before they gave up.
I was like 15.
So, yeah, if you ask me, the principal sounds like a right fucking shite hawk, but, yeah.
Do you think I could tell a quick story about when I was at school?
Go on.
So, this is one of the reasons why I was unteachable. When I was 15, I think I was in my last year of school. I went to school with, so our school uniform was black trousers, black shoes, and then there was a polo top and a jumper. That was the uniform. I wore a pair of
oh yeah,
black jeans and the stitching was white. They were plain black, but with white stitching. And we was going into morning assembly, and we had a year head who was also called Neil.
Mm-hmm.
He's dead now.
Mm-hmm.
He never liked me. He always tried picking on me.
But bullying a child, yes.
Yeah. I got my own back a couple of times. Threw a snowball at the back of his head. we was going into morning assembly. It was the start of the school day. And he saw me with his jeans on. And he said, go and wait outside my office. I waited outside his office. He kept me there all day. I didn't go to one class all day. When it got to morning break, he came up to me and said, go have your break.
Yeah,
and come
it was
back.
Just a complete control.
He kept saying, issue. He kept saying, I'm contacting your parents for them to bring you a pair of plain black trousers in.
Yeah, because that makes fucking sense.
Which, do you know, now I think about it, the white stitching would have stopped me from learning my times tables.
Mm-hmm.
It would have stopped me from reading a book in English Lit.
They were so snazzy, you just got distracted.
This is it. And maybe it was because they were so stylish, I would have been distracting the other classmates.
Mm.
But yeah, all day. And then it got to the end of the day. And that was it. Just.
Well, it's funny, you know.
He said, tomorrow morning, report to my office and show me your trousers.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's a bit of an odd thing for a grown man to say to a young boy. I was actually going to say to do with the jeans thing, I've told you I had a similar situation. I had, I think, you know, I was having my breakfast in the morning. I think, I don't know, spilled tea or whatever the fuck on my skirt. And obviously couldn't wear it in. I didn't have a spare one. So I just threw on a pair of jeans when in school. I got fucking harassed and screamed at for wearing a pair of jeans. The same thing.
Catholic school. You're going
without a skirt. It wasn't a Catholic school. Yeah, I got literally screamed at in front of hundreds of people. You know what I mean? This fucking vice principal, she hated me. I don't know what the fuck her problem was, but she didn't like me. But the funny, not funny,
who
actually.
Who looked under the table to see?
Exactly. When I was in tutor group, when I was in tutor group, which is the start of the day when they do the roll call and everything.
Form group.
Tutor group.
Form.
Tutor, but anyway. So we're sat there, we're doing the roll call, and then our year head came in. I can't remember what he was saying. And he was like, blah, 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 mid-sentence goes, is there something wrong with the uniform, Megan? And I'm like...
And you're sat at a table.
I'm sat. My legs are underneath the desk. What the fuck are you looking underneath the desk at what you would assume would be a young girl in a skirt?
Now?
Call him out, 2024. But yeah, like you said, we'll get away from our troubles.
I have plenty.
I know you do.
Stories from school.
And I'm sure we'll hear them over the episodes. Well, we'll get back to Joseph and his story because we just kind of made that all about us there. But anyway. So, like we said, Joseph was in school. He wasn't doing very well. They basically said he's unteachable, told him to stay at home. So, moving on a few years, Joseph's father, Henry, actually lost his job. So, you know, obviously money was tight and they were struggling. Henry would try to find someone who could take in his son, but unfortunately, he didn't have any luck. So, with nowhere for Joseph to stay, he was admitted to the state home and training school for mental defectives in Grand Junction. And that was when he was 10 years old.
So, would that have been free?
I'm not quite sure how it works. If it's kind of almost like kind of a foster care type of...
Yeah.
You know... Because I know it was kind of said it was kind of on and off. Yeah, he would literally spend the next 11 years of his life there on and off. So I don't know. If they didn't have a lot of money, surely it's kind of, you know.
Because could you imagine the cost of something like that now?
Oh, yeah.
For a week?
It was actually there that his family members received their psychological tests, you know, to give them the lovely titles of feeble-minded and high moron.
Yeah.
Now, for Joseph, it wasn't a great time. While there, he was beaten and abused by his peers, and this supposedly happened fairly often. Another incident that happened was back in Pueblo, and this was in 1929. A group of teenage boys forced Joseph to perform oral sex on them. And he was just 14 years old when this happened. So this was actually seen by a juvenile probation officer.
Okay.
And this officer would write a letter to the superintendent of the state home about this incident. And that would lead to the recommittal of Joseph to the school.
What's that?
He was sent back. In this letter, this officer wrote, quote, "He's one of the worst mental defective cases I have ever seen. I picked him up this morning for allowing some of the nastiest and dirtiest things done to him that I have heard of." So Joseph is the dirty bastard for these boys taking advantage of him.
It's pretty similar to, you know, this day and age. Well, I wouldn't say this day and age, but in more recent history, like a woman could be in court for being a rape victim and they will say, "You wore a thong."
Yes. Yeah, it's like, why were you wearing that if you weren't expecting sex? Yeah. And it's like, what the, where are you getting
you're dressing
that from?
For attention.
No, it's certainly a, I want to say a little bit better than it was back then, but we still have a fucking long way to go, don't we?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, instead of wanting to protect this young boy, Joseph was considered a sexual deviant for this being done to him.
Understandably.
Fair. But, like, in seriousness, it is insane, and it was a very, very disturbingly different time, you know? Yeah. So, jumping on a few years to when Joseph finally left the school for good, he was aged 21, and once he left, he started travelling by hopping rail cars, and he would eventually end up in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Now, on the 26th of August, 1936, Joseph was arrested for vagrancy in Wyoming, and that was after he was found wandering around the railways.
Right, what's that like, loitering?
Yeah, just hanging about. So, 26th of August, Joseph was arrested. But just jumping back to the 14th of August, and we're going back to Pueblo, Dorothy and Barbara Drain, two young girls, were viciously attacked while they were sleeping. The weapon used was believed to have been a hatchet. Dorothy had also been raped during this home invasion. Now, Barbara survived, but unfortunately, Dorothy died following the attack.
And Dorothy's the one who was raped?
Yes, Dorothy was raped, yeah. And Dorothy was just 15 years old, and Barbara was 12.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Now, obviously, they're looking for suspects. Two young girls were just subjected to a brutal attack. I'm sure people are going for blood.
Yeah.
So while Joseph was being questioned in regards to vagrancy, he had mentioned that he travelled through Pueblo from Grand Junction by train. So Sheriff George Carroll, who was questioning him, was like, "Got him. Got him. That's it."
Well, that's enough.
That's if you're like, "Oh, he was there at some point."
Not, well, is it enough to question him or he's going for him?
He's going for him. He's literally like, "I can get an arrest on this case." So, yeah, as soon as the sheriff heard this, that Joseph had travelled and gone through Pueblo on his travels, he began questioning Joseph on the case of Dorothy and Barbara Drain. And Sheriff Carroll would claim that Joseph confessed to him while he was questioned. Carroll later said about the interrogation that he asked Joseph if he liked girls. And Joseph replied that he liked them fine.
Guilty. Guilty. There you go. Case closed.
Well, Carroll said in response, "If you like girls so much, why do you hurt them?" Carroll claims that Joseph replied with, "I didn't mean to." Why are you immediately saying that and going, "Well, why did you do it?"
Yeah.
Just straight away, you're planting it there for him to answer
they
back.
They still do that to this day.
Yeah.
Like, what was that other case where there was, it involved three young lads?
West Memphis 3.
One of them, weren't he?
Yeah, he had a low IQ and they deliberately manipulated him.
Like, they kept they interrogating him for, like, 10 hours at a time didn't they? So he was exhausted.
It was something, like, he kept saying, like, I want my dad, I want to see my dad. And it was kind of like, if you just kind of give us what we want, you can go see your dad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fucking scummy.
Yeah.
So, Joseph was questioned for nearly 8 hours over 2 days. And Carol told of how Joe supposedly gave this whole story about how he had carried out the attack. So, Carol says, Joseph had watched the girls from the bushes, seen their parents leave the house, snuck inside the house, hit them on the head and assaulted Dorothy. He also claimed that Joseph was able to provide details about their home. And Carol would later testify to this. But he was testifying from memory. There was no notes and no witnesses.
Nothing written down.
No, it was just like, yeah, no, I remember what he said to me earlier. This is what he said. Just, you can trust me. It's all right. It's good.
Please tell, right, don't ruin it for me, but please tell me he got what's coming to him.
No.
For fuck's sake.
So after the sheriff got his confession, he contacted the Pueblo police, because bear in mind, this is back in Wyoming.
Yeah.
So police chief Arthur Grady told Sheriff Carroll that they had already arrested someone for the crime, Frank Aguilar. Now, Frank was a labourer and he had worked for the father of Dorothy and Barbara. He had also been fired not long before the attack. They also found the head of an axe at his home, and that axe had marks on it that seemed to match with the injuries that were inflicted on Dorothy.
Now, so it weren't a hatchet, it was an axe.
Yeah, they said they weren't sure, they thought it was an axe, yeah, yeah. You know. Here's the bit that's like, oh, God. They also found newspaper clippings about similar attacks from all over the country.
Oh.
It's not looking good for Frankie, but, you know, whatever. Frank would later confess to the crimes.
So this is a serial killer we could cover?
I tried to look him up. There wasn't a huge amount about him, but...
Okay.
You know, was that he was committing their crimes or he was interested and intrigued by them and, yeah, yeah. You know. So, yeah, like I said, Frank would later confess to the crimes, but Frank also said that he had never met or even seen Joseph Arady. But according to Sheriff Carroll, Joseph told him that he had, quote, been with a man named Frank at the crime scene. And he said that Joseph had told him this several times. So, Frank was convicted of the rape and murder of Dorothy Drane and was given the death sentence. And Frank was executed on the 13th of August, 1937. So, case closed.
Yeah.
Job done. The fuck it was. Joseph was brought back to Pueblo and reportedly confessed again. Now, Joseph's confession. Joseph was said to have an IQ of 46 and the mind of a 6-year-old. The evaluations from his school indicated that Joe couldn't correctly identify colours, he couldn't repeat a sequence of 4 numbers. And
so how has he described the crime scene?
Exactly. So, like you've just said, how is he able to describe details of the home?
Yeah.
When asked to explain the difference between a stone and an egg during his evaluations, he was unable to do so. But he can tell you all about the crime and, yeah, details of the interior of the home.
And this still didn't fall through?
No. I know. It's shocking. So, Joseph would have been in the category of an imbecile. And again, I know it sounds terrible to say now, but it was a term that was used at the time. And
so what was it? It was imbecile, moron, and then...
Imbecile was the median. Okay. Idiocy was the lowest.
Okay.
Now, we know now that people with limited mental capacity are more susceptible to coercion, which leads to, you know, much higher rates of confessions being made. Sorry, much higher rates of false confessions being made.
Yeah.
And this was something that Joseph had done before. When Joseph was still in the state home, he had confessed to stealing cigarettes and, you know, they knew for a fact he hadn't done it.
Yeah.
They knew it was just other boys going, you say this, did it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Another part of it, the surviving sister, Barbara, she also identified and testified that Frank Aguilar was there during the attack, but not Joseph. There was no physical evidence against Joseph, and Frank himself said that he had acted alone. But, you know, fuck the evidence, right?
Yeah.
Joseph was convicted of first-degree murder and rape and was sentenced to death. So afterwards, Gail L. Ireland, who worked on Joseph's appeals, wrote to the Supreme Court of Colorado, and he said, quote, "Believe me when I say that if he is gassed, it will take a long time for the state of Colorado to live down the disgrace."
Because how old was he as well? Just to add to it.
23, I think, when he was executed.
Fuck.
Yeah. He did manage to obtain multiple delays of Joseph's execution, and he would argue the side of Joseph's limited mental capacity and that Joseph didn't even understand what it meant to be executed.
Yeah.
9 stays of execution were given after numerous appeals and petitions on Joseph's behalf. When Joseph was asked about his upcoming execution, it was said that he showed blank bewilderment, and he told the warden, "No, no, Joe won't die." That's kind of his level of of speech, you know. It's very just kind of literal, like, "No, no." Like,
but again, he could describe,
yeah,
a crime scene. He could, yeah,
viciously attacking and sexually assaulting the girl. Yeah,
yeah.
So, 6th of January 1939 was the day of Joseph's execution. And his last meal, like we talked about before, was ice cream. And if you've listened to the last meals, you know that Joseph did not finish his ice cream and he asked for it to be kept for him to finish later.
Yeah.
Because, again, he didn't understand what was happening.
Yeah. So, I wonder, at what point did he? Like, was it as they was walking him to the gas chamber? Was it once he was in the gas chamber?
Well, while he was walking to the gas chamber, it was reported that he was still smiling.
So he still didn't have a clue?
Yeah. It was said that at one point when he was walking there, he did become a bit nervous, but the warden, Roy Best, grabbed his hand and reassured him, and that calmed him. So maybe he's a little bit nervous of, I haven't been down this way before, but overall, he was fine. Like, it's crazy. So the victims' families were not in attendance at Joseph's execution. Maybe that was...
They didn't know?
Well, maybe it was a personal choice. They didn't want to be there. Or was it because you shouldn't be doing this to that man?
Yeah.
We've already got justice from the actual killer.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the warden, Roy Best, desperately pleaded for Joseph's sentence to be commuted. But Teller Ammons, the governor of Colorado, refused. He would neither commute nor pardon Joseph. And that was it. Joseph Arity was executed by gas chamber. And the warden, Roy Best, was said to have been crying throughout the process. You know, he was powerless to stop the injustice.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole case is just horrifically sad and unfair. You know, you've got two young girls, Dorothy and Barbara, who went through unimaginable horror and, you know, result in the death of a 15-year-old girl. You've also got Joseph. Someone who not only didn't do what he was accused of, but didn't understand what they were even doing to him.
So that sheriff should have been done for murder.
I mean, yeah. No, I agree with you. I think it's disgusting. And that's for, you know, for what? Why did he do it? He literally did it. Hang on, sorry.
He saw an easy target.
Yeah, and for what? The sheriff... You know, he only did it to say he had broke that case. He'd got the arrest.
Numbers.
Possibly numbers, but he was also said to have absolutely loved the publicity he received. He was a bit of an attention whore.
Yeah, but I think his cases now need to be looked like.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
All the rest of his cases.
100%.
How many times has he done this?
I actually was looking earlier and I was on... I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's called findagrave.com.
No.
Yeah. His grave. And then when you go on to it, there's actually people who've commented basically saying, like, you were this, you were that, justice for Joseph and all this carry on.
Oh, really?
Mm. But yeah, I mean, what he did, it's exploitation of Dorothy, Barbara and Joseph. You know, could you imagine being that desperate for attention? You're going to kill a guy, essentially?
Yeah.
You just, fuck it. So, that's the bulk of the story, but I want to just loop back around to talk a bit about Joseph's time on death row. So, like I said to you, he was still smiling, walking to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
Joseph was described as, and is still, if you look up his name, it'll come up all the time with articles about him, the happiest prisoner on death row.
Because he didn't know he was on death row.
Yeah. He was well liked by both other prisoners and guards, so he clearly never made a fuss. He just got on with it.
Yeah.
And the warden, Roy Best, was said to have cared for Joseph like he was his own son. He would regularly bring him gifts, including a toy train that Joseph was said to have loved. Now, Joseph, like I said, loved this train.
Yeah.
He would grab the train, put it out into the hall, push it down the hallway. Another prisoner would grab it and run it back down to him. Like, they'd have the crack with him. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's quite sweet. So Roy Best said about this, quote, "He probably didn't even know he was about to die. All he did was happily sit and play with a toy train that I had given him." And there's a picture of Joseph, and you can see him showing the train to another prisoner.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, bless him, like. And Roy was one of Joseph's biggest supporters, and, you know, he was trying to save his life. So, jumping on ahead, supporters of Joseph formed the non-profit Friends of Joe Arady. And in 2007, his supporters got a tombstone for his grave at the Greenwood Cemetery. And there were about 50 people in attendance to pay their respects. So that's a bit nice, isn't
it? Yeah.
So there's people who want to make a difference, and you know, there's nothing you can do now, but you can still make some noise about it and try and, you know. His tombstone reads, "Here lies an innocent man." And they've worked very hard to bring the injustice of his case to the light. Another person who's done that is attorney David A. Martinez. He actually wrote a 400-page petition for the pardon of Joseph. And in 2011, Governor Bill Ritter gave Joseph Arady a full and unconditional pardon.
So while all this has gone on, mm-hmm. Where's the sheriff?
Well, he's now dead.
Oh, okay.
Remember I was saying about the find a grave?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I listen.
So Governor Bill Ritter said about this, quote, "Pardoning Joe Arady cannot undo this tragic event in Colorado history. It is in the interest of justice and simple decency, however, to restore his good name." And yeah, I mean, that's lovely to hear. And I'm glad he did it.
Yeah.
And that's the case of Joseph Arady.
That's a tough one.
It's very sad, but it's one that needs to be told. Don't you think?
Yeah.
So,
bring us back up.
Bring you back up. Let me take a look at my list of oddities. See what I've got for you.
We need a bit of humour, if you can.
Okay. Got one for you. Baby cages.
What?
You ever heard of a baby cage?
Like a gate.
It's a cage for a baby, Neil.
Well, yeah, you saw him on Rugrats all the time.
No.
Baby. Like a baby enclosure thing, like a...
No, why don't you look it up on your phone there?
Baby gate.
Cage.
Yeah. Cages, New York.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
But they're hanging them out of a fucking window.
Yes. Baby cages were invented as a way to make sure your babies were getting enough fresh air, and particularly those who lived in crowded cities like New York. The first baby cage was invented in 1922, and it was basically a chicken coop, but for children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's chicken wire.
Yeah. So
wait, hang on, I didn't look at the bottom of it. What's the support? Wait, is it hung by fucking wires? No.
It has like a yoke that you put under a shelf.
Yoke, right. So just quickly, yoke to an Irish person is anything. Anything,
yoke,
everything.
Yeah, to an Irish person, if I say like, pass me that yoke, it's the same as like someone else saying, pass me that thing, that object.
I'm still looking through these pictures. This is...
It's insane, yeah.
Like the babies look grand. They look happy.
Yeah, yeah. So like you've just seen, you would attach a wire cage to your window and sit your infant in it. And
you could be 10 stories up.
Yeah. Just sat in a little cage, God knows how many stories up. It's insane. So, you know, instead of just opening a window to let fresh air in, fuck them in a box out window.
No. Scratch that. Why did I say 10 stories up? Doesn't matter if they're on the ground floor and they're hung out of a window. It's a fucking baby.
I know. So, Eleanor Roosevelt, who was Franklin D. Roosevelt's wife, was said to have used a baby cage for her first child, Anna. They also gained popularity in London during the 20s. But by the mid-1900s, the baby cage started to fall out of favour due to concerns over safety. Now, that's just a quick little...
So, if it had lasted a little bit longer, my dad could have been in a baby cage.
Yeah.
That's fucking mental.
Yeah. It said mid-1900s. Well, actually, your dad probably wouldn't have because he's not from a city. But yeah, in theory, your dad could have been hung out of a window. There you go. It's baby cages for you. You okay?
So, yeah. Yeah, that's...
Enjoy. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.